Praise the Lord. I want you to turn to number four, effects of good leadership. Effects of good leadership. I need a microphone. Oh, that's okay. Effects of good leadership. I want you to turn to the chart and look at the chart. And I have about an hour to do this section. And Mike, would you help me? Jermaine, would you help me? Come up. I want you to look at the chart. You see the chart? See the chart? Y'all see the chart?
Yes.
Okay. Truly excellent. Y'all didn't bring y'all chart. I want y'all to kind of bring your stuff. Effects of good leadership. Truly excellent leadership results in tangible and measurable performance improvements. A direct link can be made between leadership behaviors and practices and the hard bottom line performance of the organization. Sharon, need to tell us what that's saying. You weren't paying attention.
My chart moved on my iPad. Truly excellent leadership results in tangible and measurable performance improvements. A direct link can be made between leadership behaviors and practices and the hard bottom line performance of the organization. What that says to me is...
You got to talk loud so they can... Here you go.
What that says to me is how the leader is leading or how they're leading the people, it's going to affect the performance of the organization. This part concerning a direct link can be made between leadership behaviors and practices and the hard bottom line performance of the organization. How I'm motivating, how I'm leading the people, how I respond to adversity inside of, like if somebody misses it or what have you, that's going to have an effect on the overall, how the person performs. In the bottom line.
Okay. Now listen, y'all. On January the 28th, I was giving you some introductory statements about leaders and leadership. And here's a couple of things that I said. You don't have to write this down. I'm just reiterating something I said. I said the principles of good leadership can be learned. I also said that you have enormous capacity to be a great leader because you got the nature of Jesus, you got the Holy Spirit. But there was something else I said, that great leaders are great thinkers. You remember that? What I want to happen in our sessions is not that we just have a seminar, you know, a little workshop, and then we go about our little business. But I'm desiring that we learn to think. We just think through things and not just do. You know, sometimes, you know, Byron always used these illustrations about athletes. And I was a pretty good high school athlete. I was pretty good. The difference between me, though, as a pretty good athlete in high school and people who maybe were all state and all American, is I could do it, but I wasn't thinking the game. I mean, I really wasn't. I didn't learn how to think until I got into college. And then I learned how to think even more after I graduated from college. So around 24, 25, 26, I was outstanding. At 26, because now I understood how it was played. It wasn't just running up and down the court. I could think through it. Same way with leadership. I think sometimes we play the game and we just doing it. You know what I mean? We got these tasks that we're doing and we just do it. But great leaders start thinking through this thing, okay? How does it work? How does leadership work? You can get to a place where you become a great thinker, and it just amplifies everything that goes on, because you don't just have a title. Just like me, I'm on the team, I can play, I can run, I can jump, I can shoot, but then you got this guy, he's an All-American, he's thinking through what the team's going to be doing, how they're going to be playing him, adjustments he got to make. He's thinking through all that. So now he operates at a level that I'm not going to be operating at, even though I may have talent and skill. It's the same way in leading. Some people, they really think through it. Now, this chart is a visual. And if we can understand something about the chart, rather than me, see, there's some explanation on the next pages, but rather than me just going through the thing and just read some and y'all listen and say amen and we leave, no, let's look at the chart and let's start thinking a little bit. And I want to see what you get out of it. Now, Mike has, you know, in his leadership in the church, has done a great job from I think he's really good in creating a climate. I mean, very rarely do I hear anybody that works in his area get all upset about what's going on. I mean, just, you don't have a lot of junk going through. He does a great job, to me, of creating climate. So, Mike, just off the top, when you think of climate, explain to them what your concept of climate is.
For me, climate is big. For me, climate is the work environment itself. A part of it is what I think can be tangibly seen in terms of how we interact with one another, you know, as teammates. But a part of it may not be seen as much in terms of, I think climate is also how we think. To me, a good climate is one in which you have the right people on the bus. They know their roles, but more importantly, they know why they're doing what they're doing, and they know how what they're doing fits into the bigger picture.
How do you create it? Because the people, I look at your appraisals, they're always talking about you good. I mean, you know, how do you create that? Is it something you're doing on purpose? How do you create a climate where people feel the morale is up and people want to come and people, pardon me? What were you going to say? Okay, come up here and help us out and see. I'm trying to get it, make it more concrete than just reading a bunch of stuff. I want us to be thinking, you know what I mean, than just read a bunch of stuff. So tell us, so because other folk, we all know you, but other folk may not know your relationship to Mike, what your relationship is, and talk about him in terms of climate.
Okay. I've been working with Michael K for about 6 years, I think now. And a part of how he creates the climate is through communication. He is a huge communicator. He communicates everything. He's concerned about you as an individual. He's going to make sure that you're clear on the expectations. And it's not just that, he also majors on teamwork or teaming, not necessarily just the work, but bringing the team together and making sure that there is relationship. So I think those are two of the main ways that he creates a positive climate, through relationship and through communication.
Relationship and communication. Anything else you want to say about climate, Mike? Because, see, I'm asking you, and this is totally unrelated to the fact that he's my son. He's done a good job of creating a climate where people under him feel engaged. And so anything you want to share about climate before we get into it that you think would be helpful?
Well, just how it relates to this document. This document talks about behaviors. If I'm working on a project or working with the team or what have you, there's normally three things that I'm trying to do. One, I'm trying to make sure that as a leader, I'm clear or as clear as possible in terms of where we're trying to go. For me, that's where it starts. hearing from God on where we need to go, hearing from pastor on where we need to go, and trying to be as clear as possible about that. Once I have clarity myself, if I'm working with the team, the next step is to make sure that they're clear on where it is that we're trying to go. If we're trying to go to the beach, they understand that we're trying to go to the beach. They know why we're going to the beach. They know what it's going to look like when we get to the beach. Just, you know, where we're going, what is that destination. The second thing, once I know where I'm trying to go or where the team is trying to go, is I try to ask myself, what are the type of behaviors, which ties back into this, what are the type of behaviors that we have to exhibit for where we're trying to go? So in the beach example, if we're headed to the beach, one of the behaviors that we have to exhibit is we're probably, if we're walking on the sand, going to have to wear flip-flops. So I'm trying to identify, trying to make sure that the team knows what are the behaviors, how do we need to act, how do we need to communicate for where it is that we're trying to go. And then once we have a clear picture on how people at the beach act and how those, what those behaviors are, then the third step is just to kind of look at your systems. What systems do you have in place to drive those behaviors? Because you may have a system, you may have a structure in place that is out of alignment with the behaviors that you want, but once you correct those systems, it'll drive those behaviors, and doing what people do at the beach is what'll help you to get there.
Good, thank you. Jermaine, I asked Jermaine to come up because oftentimes I'll tell Jermaine, I think he's a great thinker. I think if you want something to be organized and thought through, I mean really thought from A to Z, and the little pieces in between, I think he's a really great thinker. So processes is another thing there. Tell us what a process is, and then tell us how you think about processes, how processes relate to organizational behavior, and what is your role in making sure that's in place.
Good morning. That was a filibuster. Give me a chance to think.
That was a filler, wasn't it?
A process to me is a tool of communication. It tells you look at, you want to know where you want to go. So in order for you to know where you want to go, many times you need a process in order to get there. So when you document a process, it tells the person that's wanting to go a particular place what steps they need to take in order to get there. I'll use an example. I'm merging the questions that Pastor just asked me into somewhat of one answer. Recently, Michelle Burney sent out a process regarding office supplies. Over the past years, we've had very many procedures to get office supplies, but many times it was tied to delivery. It was tied to a person leaving the campus and going. It had about five or six different levels of signatures. It took a lot in order for you to order some ink pens and things of that type. Then what the challenge was is that you didn't know where to pick them up from. You didn't know how to get them and things of that type. So whenever I'm thinking about a process, the first thing that I try to do is determine if there's a need. The next thing that I try to do is that I try to look at that process from about maybe five different views. I try to look at it from the customer. I try to look at it from the person who may have this high intellect to a person who's not used to reading processes and procedures on a day-to-day basis. Then another thing that I try to look at is how easy is it? Sometimes we say processes are hard because we don't have them. And sometimes processes and procedures are hard because we haven't communicated what we do have. So when you're writing them, your goal is not to just write, but then also to try to get it out to the people so that they know what to do. So if you look at that one that was just sent out, the goal was, how do we make the process a one-step process to get supplies? So now all the end user has to do is to look inside of a book, determine what they want, write it down, and send it as an email. They don't have to route it to their manager and get these signatures, and the manager can do this. They can copy their manager on the email. The manager can reply if they want. If they don't, they reply, but it's then ordered and it's done. The other thing that was a challenge when looking at office supplies is that many of you are females and you're having to go and get products, leaving the campus, and then having to carry the thing back again. We were looking for an easy way to eliminate that problem. So when I'm doing processes, I'm trying to eliminate as many issues as I can, which is sometimes it makes it very slow. Many times when we're developing processes, we're a little impatient because we want to get it right now. But in order for you to get it correctly, you have to take it slow and think through it. Sometimes that's a challenge in an organization similar to ours that moves very fast. So for me, the importance of developing processes and procedures is so that everyone knows what they're supposed to do. So when you look at the chart and it talks about effectiveness of delivery using that process that I just mentioned to you, when it's communicated, and Mike talked about the climate where he's dealing with morale and things of that, you know, processes can deteriorate morale in an organization. It can make people frustrated. It can make them feel as if that they're not, or the organization doesn't care about them. So they're hand in hand. And then on clarity of roles, when you're developing processes, you want to make sure that whomever is responsible for creating, whoever is responsible for communicating, and whomever is responsible for executing knows what their role is in that.
Good. I want you to look. Oh, thank you. Good job. I wanted to look you to look at this. And I want you to just kind of glance at the chart because we got to make sure that we understand what the words are. Because a lot of times you can look at words. Mike talked about climate, and we gave you a definition earlier. How does it feel to work around here? Climate. How does it feel to work around here? How does it feel to work around here? What is the morale level in working around here? People excited about working around here? Do people, Mike talk about role clarity, people know what they're supposed to do around here? Climate. How does it feel to work in your area? That's important for you as a leader, because as leaders, we tend to think about results. We think about results. And sometimes we overlook climate because how it feels to work around here will actually contribute to positive results or can actually hinder you having positive results. So as a leader, it is your responsibility to not just assign tasks and jobs and goals and objectives, but to also work to create, first you got to be aware of this issue of climate. You got to be aware of the issue of climate. How do people feel working under you? How do people feel working in your area? That's something you got to be aware of because that's going to help contribute to your results. Jermaine talked about processes. He used several words. He talks about steps. He mentioned, I was listening to him talk about steps. So when I think of processes, I'm thinking about steps or functions that bring about a result. I got a result. This is what I want to get done. Processes, steps or functions that help bring that about. He also talked about communicating two sides, internal customers, the people on your team, but external customers, people outside need to know what the process is. How do I join the church? I mean, how do I get connected in ministry? If I want to work in the church, what's the process? If people want to get involved in your ministry, what's the process? What do they have to go through? What are the steps? What are the functions that they have to go through to get connected in your ministry? You have to be aware of that, of those steps, those functions, and they have to be communicated to all the teammates so they'll know, and then it has to be communicated to the customer so that they'll know. And then Jermaine also mentioned something about them being easy. Sometimes we have a bunch of stuff that we need to take out because it's just not easy. So that's the leader's responsibility to be concerned about the processes. Now, effectiveness of delivery, what's that? What is that, effectiveness of delivery? how well it's carried out. Yes.
It also is the, when you're communicating, you can say whatever you want to say, but if the other person doesn't understand, just like you're going over the definition of these words, that enables us to thoroughly understand or to ask questions. So effectiveness of delivery is communicating so that the person...
What are we delivering? What are we communicating? What are we delivering, Michelle? Results?
Service.
Huh?
Service.
We delivering services? Products? Care? Especially in the church, we're really delivering care. Does that make sense to you, that we're delivering care? Okay. When I said we're delivering care, what did that mean to you? Yes.
We're caring for people. We're just caring for people.
Okay, we're caring for people, but how effective are we in delivering that care? How effective are we in delivering benevolence care, counseling care, visitation care? How effective are we in delivering whatever it is we're delivering? Because we can have a good product, but we're not effective in delivering it. Does that make sense? Okay. Role clarity, what's that? Yes.
Knowing your position, well, knowing what you're asked to do, knowing what's expected.
Knowing what's expected of you, knowing what your role is. What's individual motivation?
Oh, I was going to add on to
you. You want to add on and then tell us what individual motivation is.
He touched on knowing what you're supposed to do, but also in the importance of getting things done or delivering results is knowing what others are supposed to do.
Knowing what others are supposed to do. Okay.
Individual motivation, that is, it all ties to, it can tie to climate in terms of the working environment and all of that, but also you being motivated about the vision or about what you're called to do and the role you play in the ministry.
So is there a leadership side to motivation?
I think so.
Is there a personal side to motivation?
Absolutely.
Tell me the difference between leadership and personal.
I think on the leadership part, it's important for the leader to rally people around the vision of what you want them to do. But the individual motivation comes when you see how you fit into that part of the vision.
Good. You want to say something, Will?
Well, I did. The individual motivation and you being motivated and then being able to motivate somebody else.
Okay. Deborah?
I think from individual motivation, I know the manager or the climate has a lot to do with it, but we as individuals, we have a lot to do with that too, because your attitude, I mean, you know, managers can only do so much, climate, whatever, and you can put everything on the management and say the climate's bad, they don't love me, whatever, but somewhere inside of you, you've got to find that place of motivation, and your attitude has to be positive because you still got to work.
Right.
You still need to be here or want to be here, so you have to decide, regardless of my manager, sometimes you may have to make that decision, regardless of what I think about the climate or whatever, I'll motivate myself to accomplish whatever I need to accomplish, because there's some things in us that we just want to do, and you don't always let other people stop you or climate stop you. There's an individual motivation and attitude that you have to have.
That's excellent. And that's what I really wanted that to come out, because sometimes we talk about leader, 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 but there's something we got to have on the inside of us too. I'm going to give a comment here and then I'm going to ask some questions.
I was going to say the leader finds out what it takes to motivate that worker. That worker takes that motivation to put out his best work.
Okay. And I think that you're absolutely right. I think that there's a part of it, and we're going to see an explanation that there's a part that the leader have to play in finding out what motivates. So when you look at this chart, you see leadership behaviors, climate, processes, then process, role, clarity, effectiveness, delivery, motivation, and then you see organizational performance. Just looking at this chart, what one thing you get out of it? What one thing? What one thing? Just one thing, yes.
It all works together for the organization to move forward.
What all works together?
These things, how the behaviors of the leadership, the climate, the processes, our individual motivation, the effectiveness of delivery and clarity of goals, all of that makes the whole of the organization move forward.
Okay, that's true. Somebody, yes. Hey, so what now?
The common denominator for me for creating the climate and creating the processes was communication.
Okay, so the communication part came. Okay, when you look at this, just looking at this, what do you get out of it? What do you get out of it? Remember, you got to think. Come on, think. I don't want to just tell you everything. You can't be sitting there and me. I got to tell you everything. What do you see? Just looking at this, what do you see? Yes. Yes, sweetheart. Yeah.
That the leadership behavior affect the elements that ultimately produces the performance.
Okay. The leadership behavior affect the elements that affect the performance. Yes.
When I looked at the chart, what I looked at the organizational performance, it was like the bottom line. And the bottom line in the organization is impacted by the climate and processes that we as leaders create.
Okay. What do you see, Michael?
The behaviors that we exhibit will determine the results that we get.
The behaviors that we exhibit will determine results. Everything starts with the leader. I'm asking y'all to look at this because if I were you and you're over somebody or have aspirations to be a leader, I would study this. See, I would study this because if you understand this, then you'll start thinking on a higher level. You won't just think getting tasks done. Somebody give you a task, you get it done. No, you'll start thinking. Your thinking will be broader, yes.
Climate and process, the boxes are bigger. So to me, that stands out. Those two need to be married,
okay,
so that organization performance can go at the rate that you want it to go.
Okay. Yes, Corey.
Yeah, from looking at the chart, overall, it is, I would say a successful organization is a sum total of the tangible and intangible elements of organization, but it has to be a balance.
Okay.
Sum total. You can't do one.
What on here would be tangible and what would be intangible?
Your tangible would be climate because you cannot physically see it, but you can feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like it's kind of like it's just going to affect the senses, those things that you can't physically put your hands on, but you can touch a process because
that's great.
It's a steps. It's a list of steps. It's a list of procedures. You have documentation to bring that process to fruition, but you also have those intangible elements that you can't ignore, but they can be beneficial and just as detrimental if they're not brought into consideration.
That's a great insight. Just a great insight. It's a combination of tangibles and intangibles, and you're thinking through the tangible. You're not walking around and in your head in a cloud, folk not getting along in your area, and you don't know it. You don't have a clue that folk ain't happy. I mean, you don't have a clue that folk ain't happy. You're just in your own world, and you're just doing your own thing. No, that intangible, leaders got to sense stuff. And then you talk enough to get enough information to find out what's going on with these people because you need them to be motivated. You don't need them to drag in. But you got to be in the ball game thinking about that rather than just something tangible. Intangible, yes.
I know the arrow is for clarity of roles is for processes,
yes.
But I'm looking at clarity of roles connected to individual motivation. For a VP, I'm looking at it from a VP standpoint. If they don't know what their role is, if it's not explained clear enough, if it's not clarified, they're not going to be motivated to do it because they're not sure what they're supposed to be doing. So for me, looking at it from a VP standpoint, and that's come up a lot, what's my role? What
yes.
am I supposed to be doing? And if they know that clearly, then they'll be more motivated to do what that role says they should
and
be doing.
And if every leader leave with that understanding that the people who are supposed to carry out the job, it is my job as the leader to make sure that they know what their role is. They don't just find that out by, I mean, it is my job as a leader to do that. It'll make a big difference in your leadership. Yes. Well, before you ask a question, I'm going to let you ask some questions probably at the end because I want to go through some explanation, but I just want to see what you get out of the chart. Anybody else?
I have something.
Yes.
I got everything everybody was saying, but when I was sitting here thinking, which this is off, but how important integrity is in this, and the reason I say that is because some of this you can measure. Some of it you can't measure attitude, and how the leader has to have insight, they have to have foresight, they have to depend on the Holy Spirit because some things may not ever be revealed. And to give you an example of that is I heard Joyce Meyer say one time, she was working in this for this person, and she did everything right. She did everything right, but when she got her evaluation, she didn't get a good evaluation. And so she asked the leader why she didn't get a good evaluation. And he said, I don't know what it is about you, but it's something. You do everything that I asked you to do, but it's something about you. And she said it was her attitude. But she never told him how unhappy she was with him. She never told him how unhappy she was about working there. She really didn't want to be there, but she did not tell him that. And so he had the insight, he had the foresight to know that just from, I guess, observation and her behavior. But he really couldn't measure it because of attitude. So integrity is just real important in
this. I agree with you. I want to go back to something Deb mentioned about we got to have our own motivation. See, if I stand up, all I can do is point you in a direction. There has to be some internal motivation on your part. When I say if you understand this chart, it can take your leadership to another level. You'll go from just being a skill player to being a thinking leader. If I were you, I would study this chart, I would study the explanations, and I would begin to evaluate my leadership in terms of, am I thinking through on all these different areas? Now, with that in mind, let's look at some of the explanations. Turn to the next page. Turn to the next page. Leadership and processes. Leadership behaviors, and I'm going to talk, remind me, come on, somebody, don't let me leave today without talking specifically what it means. Give you a specific example of a leadership behavior, okay? So leadership behaviors have a direct impact on organizational climate. A leader's behavior also has an impact on organizational processes. So that statement is saying that not only the way I lead, my leadership behaviors, my style of leadership is going to have an impact on the climate. But it's also going to have an impact on the processes, the steps, the functions to getting results done. How people communicate with one another is usually determined by the leader. How people make decisions. How people make decisions, how people know what to do, how people know what to do has a lot to do with the leader. Leadership and process is individual motivation. It is up to the leader to understand what motivates different individuals in order to work effectively with each member of the team. ensure they remain energized, ensure they are personally motivated while continuing to contribute positively toward the organizational goals. Now, when I was trying to think, how should I do this? Okay. Go back up to leadership and processes. Let me break that down for you. Leadership behaviors have a direct impact on organizational climate. A leader's behavior also has an impact on organizational process, how people communicate with one another, how people make decisions, how people know what to do. Okay. I know I read that again, but I'll read individual motivation. Now, when it talks about, I'll come back. I'm sorry. I'm trying to think how to explain that to you, but I'll come back. It's a part of our responsibility to determine what motivates workers. Would you agree with that? We know the balance side is we have to have some inward personal motivation, right? But it is my responsibility as a leader to determine what motivates workers, right? Okay. Question: what motivates workers? How do I determine what motivates workers? Talking to them individually. Huh?
Seeing what gifts and skills and talents they have, what God has called them to do, just finding out about them.
Okay.
Develop a relationship.
Huh?
Develop a relationship.
Develop a relationship. Another way? Yes.
The love language book was a big help to me in dealing with people. To find out what, because gifts may motivate one person, words may motivate another. So you're giving folk out of your love language, and a lot of times that don't motivate them. That's what motivates you. So you need to take the time to find out what is my love language. What motivates me?
What was that book we had? They took the five love languages and put it in a work setting.
Five
languages of appreciation, but they use those same things. Some people are motivated by affirmation. Some people are motivated by gifts. Some people are motivated by different things. And I think it's a good book on five love languages of appreciation. And learning what turn people on, basically, what turn people on. Because some people, if you acknowledge their contribution, it means a lot to them. Some people, you know, I think Maslow, whatever his name was, he had three basic needs. Some people have a need for achievement. Some people have a need for affiliation. And some people have a need for power. Some people need to achieve. And if you'll give them tasks to do, and give them the authority to do it, and they can run with it. They love that. Some people are motivated by teams. They like to affiliate. They like to be connected in a group. And then some people, they are motivated by control, not in a negative way. It's just that they like to have some influence on the outcomes. And so it is our responsibility to determine what's motivating the people that's serving us. Some of that is going to come by us getting on the internet. Y'all more internet savvy than I am. Get on the internet and look up what motivate workers. Yeah. See, some of this you have to do on your own. What motivates workers? Go on there and look up motivation, and you'll find a lot of things that you can see that will help you to work toward motivating people. Clarity of roles, number three. Delivering consistent high performance with an organization requires more than just recruiting or retaining effective and motivated people. It's also essential that each individual is clear about his or her role, as well as, and this is what Naomi was talking about, how their role contributes toward the delivery of the organizational goals. In other words, you clarifying what they do, but how do what they do contribute to the overall goals? How their roles need to interact and communicate with the roles of others in the organization? How their roles impact others' roles, who is dependent upon the output of their work? What they need from others in order to perform their role? You know, this is a good checklist, isn't it? See, this is a good checklist because sometimes you can tell people what their role is, but like Naomi said, how their role interact with somebody else's role. Sometimes what we do is dependent on somebody else. We need to know that. Sometimes our capacity to perform our tasks is dependent on somebody else doing something else. There needs to be some communication about that. And if I'm in a role, I also need to be informed on how what I do will impact somebody else. Did you see the difference? What others do will impact me, but what I do will impact others. There need to be some communication, and I think that's why sometimes there's friction, because we need something that we're not getting from somebody else. And sometimes the somebody else is not communicated toward on how that impacts somebody else. Does that make sense to anybody here? Nod at me or something, grind or something, so I can know whether to go on. Part of this clarity, on number six, part of this clarity comes from having well-defined structures and job definitions. Part comes from how the leader communicates with individuals and delegate responsibility. A big part of this whole thing is communicating. I mean, it's just a big part. I'm not sure you can over-communicate. What I've discovered is that much of the time when we have friction or have, if not always friction, sometimes it's frustration, is we not communicated thoroughly. We just hadn't talked enough, and we hadn't talked to enough people. I also have been working real hard, you know, to make sure that what's said in my little corner goes out to other folk. And that's a thing that I had to overcome in the past. Sometimes I'm talking to a leader and we on the same page, but we ain't getting that communication to other folk who are impacted by it. So you got to always ask yourself, we may be on the same page, but is there somebody else impacted by what we just got through talking about? And if there's somebody else impacted by what you and I just got through talking about in this office, and we don't communicate fully, then it causes problems. And it's nothing devilish. It's not the devil. We don't need to bind. We don't need to cast nothing out. And we don't have to get into distrust. And all of it ain't about distrust. You know what I mean? Sometimes we murk it up by adding too many spiritual things to it, when really it's just an issue of under-communicating. And if you don't get nothing else out of this one, the communicating fully so that everybody will know what's going on. Leadership and climate. Organizational climate combined with the processes adopted by the organization are the most significant factors affecting performance. Maybe that's why they were big boxes, Jermaine. Because climate and process impact everything more than ever. Both of these are linked to a leader's behavior. When we refer to organizational climate, we are talking about factors such as how clear people are about their roles and their contribution to the overall mission. See, that keeps coming up. How empowered, now here's the whole issue of climate. How empowered and trusted people feel in order to be able to work effectively with the scope of their roles. Do people feel empowered to do what they're supposed to do? Do people feel like you trust them? That has a lot to do with climate. How well people are recognized for their contributions toward achieving the organizational goals. I try to do it. Sometimes I may forget, but I try to do it. I try to recognize folk. I try to call out names here. If I call out Terry's name Sunday, I'm not sure you were in there when I did it, but I call out her name. Well, she's over this, and they give our dance ministry a good hand, or Melinda was over this, and y'all, this one is over. Giving people credit for what they do is really important. Is very important. If somebody led something, say they led it. Say they did it. How defined and how flexible processes and structures are to support the work people do. You can have processes and structures, but there need to be some flexibility there. How people are developed to meet the needs of the organization as well as their individual aspirations. That goes to that training component that Eric was talking about. Yes.
As it relates to climate, how well you deal with slackers in the organization. Let's say we're on a team and we got somebody that's not pulling their weight.
Yes.
And a lot of times managers or leaders are so concerned about keeping the climate happy, everybody happy. Well, you know, most of the people should be happy, but if you got slackers, they got negative attitudes, they're not carrying their load. To me, you affect the climate as a leader if you don't deal with that person effectively.
It's very subtle, too. It undermines the authority of the leader. It undermines the trust of the leader. When you have poor performers and not the poor performers are not dealt with and people feel like you're not dealing with it, it can cause problems. So I think you're absolutely correct. That's a whole nother side, but it shows you that the leader got to be thinking through all this stuff. I mean, you just got to be thinking through that, and you want to work real hard to protect your climate. In organizations where people are recognized for their contribution, supported, and developed, the result is a positive climate. The additional subsequent result is the maximization of organizational input. So positive climate equals positive output. On page 7, I'm going to read that, and then I want to go back to the chart, and I want to show you something on the chart and give you some concreteness to this leadership behavior, because we've been using it in a generic sense, leadership behavior. Measures can be used, you're on page 7, to keep a regular check on the climate of a whole organization, specific departments or individual teams. By regularly monitoring every 6 months or even annually, you can maintain a check on critical elements relating to the organizational climate, in particular leadership behaviors, and so take action to bring about change where necessary. A few examples of possible measures are employee surveys, customer satisfaction surveys, customer correspondence, praise or complaints, 360-degree feedback surveys on leadership, appraisal ratings and related verbatim comments, getting comments from people, employee focus groups, prevalence of employee grievances. If you have a lot of grievances in a certain area, that's going to tell you something about it. Now, what we're doing, and I'm asking every leader to do this, is come up with some kind of survey, come up with some kind of feedback system in your area, so that you can get information from the people that you're leading. If you're servicing customers, you need to have some kind of survey that customers can give you some feedback to know how you're doing. So organizationally, Viesa has the responsibility of incorporating these different processes in place so that we can get feedback. But every leader needs to come up with something. If it's nothing more than a card or something, you need to know how the people feel that you're servicing or working with, or people working for you. You need to know how you're doing in their regard. And I've said enough in these things. In fact, I said something, and then Karen went out and put it in a thing. Now we're going to... You sent it to... Okay. Karen took those things I put last and put it in a, it was great. So somehow we're going to get that to people, because I thought the way she came up with it and put it together is important for you to get information from people. It's not bad. That's not a bad thing, y'all. It's just not a bad thing. It's, you got to take the initiative to make sure you're getting that kind of feedback. If you're getting the kind of feedback you need to on a regular basis, when you get to these annual appraisals and all these different things like that, guess what? It won't be any surprises for you. And a lot of things you can take care of yourself without anybody, without the organization handling that. But I want to go back. Let's go back to the chart. When it talks about leadership behaviors impacting climate, impacting processes, and these things impacting motivation, effectiveness, or deliver clarity of roles, let me give you an illustration of when it talks about leadership behaviors. Let's be a little more concrete about that. Let's say leadership style. Let's say leadership style. And let's say your leadership style is you're a micromanager, which means you got to have your hand on everything. I mean, you just got to have your hand on everything. And then let's say you have another person has another style. They have a hands-off kind of style. These are the people who delegate and empower. They delegate and empower. This person over here is a micromanager, and then a lot of times they performing a lot of stuff, and then everything got to run through them. I mean, they got their hands on everything. Now, let's say if you put each one of those styles under the leadership behavior, can you see how that going to impact the climate? One style will impact the climate. Explain it to us.
With the hands-off approach in power, they will...
I'll start over again.
With the hands-off approach of the empower, they will impact the climate. They will have a positive morale because people feel like, I know what I'm supposed to do. They'll have their individual motivation that, with a role clarity, I know what I'm supposed to do. And how
will you do this for me?
Yes.
Role clarity, I think somebody else brought it up. Role clarity will also be over on this side too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really would be over on this side too. Will you just follow the way it's put though?
Okay. The hands-off empower.
And go down, climate and down, okay.
Will positively affect the climate.
Okay.
And that will, in turn, positively affect the individual's motivation.
Why?
Because if the climate is good, if I feel good coming to work, then I feel good about doing, I have that internal barometer that lets me, that gives me that zest to do what I'm supposed to do.
Now, if this person is more of a micromanager, how does that impact the climate?
It stifles the climate. It smothers me. I'm not motivated because you're going to tell me how to do it and when to do it. And so I don't have that drive.
Okay. You see how that makes it more concrete? See how that makes it more concrete? Let's let's say, I may be saying the same thing, but I'm going to say it a little bit differently. Let's say you are more of an authoritarian in the way you approach leadership. And let's say, as opposed to a collaborative kind of leadership, how would that impact?
In the authoritarian,
is it the same thing?
You're dictating versus me buying into.
Okay, so some leaders can tend to be very authoritarian. They just tell you everything. They tell you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, where to do it. I mean, they just tell, and basically, they create a climate where the people are just gophers. A collaborative type of leadership is how is it different?
You take ownership because my opinions matter.
So now I am collaborating. Followers have some input to what we're trying to accomplish and how we're trying to accomflish those things. So the morale, the motivation is going to be a little bit different. Now, that's on that climate side. What about the process side?
You wait on me?
Anybody. It's just making sense when you look, when you put a behavior in there. It's not just generic. Now, we're talking about a behavior, the way you behave in your leadership, the way you act, the way you lead is impacting stuff. Yes.
Now, there's a difference in what's going to be affected, and I'll explain that. When you have an authoritarian figure, which actually, though, can be a little different from micromanagement, but that's a moot point. When you have someone
What's the difference?
Well, you can have someone that's an authoritarian. They may not necessarily be a micromanager, but everything that's done, they've got to clear it.
Gotcha.
So
that's good.
That's a subtle difference, but it can make a difference.
Good.
So when
everything got to run back through them.
Right.
Yeah.
And they might not be over
got to run back
everything.
Through
them. Even though they're not there dictating it, before it clears, they got to know it, and they got to know if they're going to agree with it.
Right.
Okay. So then in the process side, now that's different from climate in the sense that it deals more with the operational components of how things happen. So if you've got someone who's a little more laid back and allows people to take a situation, take what they do and do it, then they're going to take ownership of that process. And a lot of the things that the leader would have to observe gaps in, because they're involved in the process and have liberty, they'll see the gaps and communicate with the others who are in roles that cross over or roles that affect roles. Then they can communicate with those people and make adjustments and gaps. Then they can let the leader know what they're doing. And if it's a good adjustment or something that causes the process to flow better, then the leader, all he has to do is see it and appreciate the fact that they saw it and appreciate them.
I'm going to add something to what you just said.
Okay.
Because depending on the style of leadership, and that's behavior now, leadership
right.
Behavior, the processes are determined sometimes by the leader. Whereas a different style of leadership, people are coming up with processes themselves. And sometimes it's better for people who are connected to the delivery to come up with processes. Sometimes people who are right on the delivery floor,
right,
for lack of a better word,
right,
getting the product to the person, getting the service to the person, can come up with a better process than somebody standing up here,
right,
and don't have a clue about, because I'll give you a classic illustration. The people who are selling the tapes see the people standing in the line. The head over here may not even know you got people all around the building trying to get tapes. And this person that's working the tape table or whatever can think, boy, this doesn't make sense for all these people have to be standing in this line. But if they don't have no say-so in it, they're just going to do what you tell them to do. So the leadership style can also determine who determines the best method of delivery. Does that make sense? Yes. I think you had some.
I was just going to say with the processes, with the laid-back style of leadership, that when you're enabling your employees to make decisions, it also enables them to adapt to change rapidly. Whereas the micromanager, the authoritarian, they want their I's dotted and their T's crossed. And if it's not just right, then you may miss out on that change because they can't change to a rapidly changing environment.
Okay, bye.
I just have a question. When you're a leader and you're developing a relationship with the people that are under you, is there some point in time when you are allowing them to make decisions, but it's good for them to filter them through you first to see, have they thought through it? Have they done what they needed to do instead of just letting them act upon it? I mean, ultimately, you build the relationship. You understand that, okay, they are thinking through this. I can't go in and release them now, but would it be a good idea just to start letting them?
Well, let me share this with you. Usually when we deal with a point, we're dealing with one extreme, mm-hmm. and like Deborah came up, and we were talking about internal motivation, you having your own motivation as opposed to the leader. What she did is brought balance to that. What Vyesh is talking about, and I'm going to add something to it. There are times or stages in the relationship where you may have to be a little more hands-on. You see what I'm saying? And that's based on the experience of the people involved. It's based on the skill set of the people involved. And in fact, some people require a little more hands-on throughout the thing. So whenever we discuss in a point, there's always a balanced side to that. There's always that other side to it. And so the worst thing you can do is just let it go. That's one extreme. But the other extreme is you got your hand on it. And nobody can even create, they can't even be created within the context of it because of your leadership style. And so there's two sides of it. I'm going to go here, and then I'm through. Because technically, we can't get everything out of this. But if y'all will study and meditate on it, I think, let me ask you a question. Did you get at least one thing out of this that could help you in your leadership? That's the critical issue, that you get some out of this. And if nothing more than you thinking broader, yes.
I was just going to Vyesh's point, there's a book, or years ago we went through something called Good Delegation, Bad Delegation. And I think that a leader has to know the difference between you don't just delegate and you gone. There are steps in delegation, there are checkpoints, there's communication points, and that's where you find out how much of hands-off can you be with that person, right. By following certain good delegation steps.
Right. Yes.
I read in our resource area there's a book called The 1 Minute Manager, and it's on leadership, and it delves into this very thing, that the same leader can have different behaviors depending upon who they're leading. Some people, that when they're hired, they already have great experience, which is what you were alluding to, and they can just take a ball, and once they find out what the vision and mission is, they can take the ball and run with it. But other people need to develop skill sets and things like that. But it's a quick read, and it's really explains this area.
Here's my closing comments. What we're doing initially is we're giving you an overview of leadership. We'll get into the delegating, all motivating, all that. So it's, you could break this down and you can talk about it forever and cover the specifics of it. But the bottom line on today's lesson is the chart. That leadership behavior impacts climate, impact processes, impact individual motivation, impact the delivery, impact the role clarity, and then it ultimately impacts performance. And so that tells me that how I lead is critical. And that's what you should get out of it, that how I lead is critical. And I have to think about more than just the results. I got to think about these other things that gets me to those results, like climate and processes. I got to think through those things. Yes. I thought you all had an exercise. You don't have enough time? Okay. Okay. Any questions before we close? Good. You got 20 minutes left? You got 20 minutes? Good. I'm through. Love y'all.